You know, it's my great pleasure right now to introduce to everybody a man who really needs no introduction.
Carl.
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 Carl. Dragon.
King.
Carl. I'm not calling the fans geeks. I'm not calling them rednecks, tobacco chewing nothing, because I've done all that myself.
Carl.
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 Carl. Dragon.
King. Carl.
In your dreams, you will see me.
Excuse me, please, let's don't talk negatively.
I'm going to win the title. I'm going to keep my money and buy me some good old Tennessee drinking whiskey with it.
Thank you for being such a great husband.
And this is for you, Fannie Mae. Solid gold, baby, just like you and me.
Hey, everybody. Carl here for the Dragon King Carl Classic Wrestling Audio Show at WrestlingObserver.com, Figure4Online.com, and want to invite you all over to my website, WhenItWasCool.com. There you'll find some 2,000 shows in our archive. Become a Patreon supporter over there and get some access to some really cool stuff. And I'm doing a series. That's why you're seeing this. This is not one of our usual rotation of shows. Taking a little bit of a break from that to get some different stuff in real quick. I'm doing a series called A through Z of professional wrestling that's going to be running on my free channel in a little bit. But going through and doing some shows to kind of hit some of the letters I maybe didn't have a biography or a podcast already done for. And sometimes it leads you to something kind of interesting. There wasn't a lot of Q-related names that I, you know, wanted to do a biography on. There were a few there, out there, but not anybody I really, you know, felt fit with the time frame I, you know, usually cover, or anybody that I just specifically wanted to look at with a full-fledged biography. But it did lead me to, you know, a pretty cool little historical reference, and that being, we're going to look at the Queensbury Athletic Club. And what this is 1930s promotion that ultimately became something you're all very familiar with, Maple Leaf Wrestling. And that was the Frank Tunney organization out of Toronto, Canada, a legendary territory in the territorial era, a promotion that, you know, was one of the very few that worked with both Crockett Promotions and WWF. They had run a lot of shows sometimes with joint talent from each promotion on there. So, you know, the Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto, Canada is a legendary venue for professional wrestling. And so the Maple Leaf Wrestling in the 1970s and 80s was one of the really premier pro wrestling companies, but it dates all the way back before that. The promotion initially was known as the Queensbury Athletic Club, and it traces its roots back to 1930 when it was launched by Jack Corcoran, who had previously promoted boxing in Toronto under the Queensbury name. Initially, Corcoran was involved in a promotional war with rival promoter Ivan Mikhailov, but Corcoran allied himself with the new Maple Leaf Gardens in 1931, and he took control of professional wrestling in Toronto. Maple Leaf Gardens would remain the main venue for the promotion for more than 60 years. And Corcoran would be involved with the Queensbury Athletic Club until 1939. So we're talking about a period of, you know, the decade of the 1930s, from 1930 through 1939. Corcoran stepped down in 1939 and was bought out by his assistants, John and Frank Tunney. John died just a few months later, and the promotion was then ran by Frank Tunney. Most of the 1940s and 1950s, Frank Tunney's biggest star was local hero Whipper Billy Watson, who became a two-time world heavyweight champion. Starting in 1969, the shows were headlined by the Sheik for more than 8 years. Over the decades, they kept the gardens busy on nights when there was no hockey game. Canadian, British Empire, and world titles were all defended there. In 1978, they aligned themselves with Jim Crockett Promotion, who at the time ran Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling in the Carolinas. Of course, we know ultimately they would expand outside that area and ultimately sell to Ted Turner and become WCW. The two would become partners in the Toronto promotion, along with George Scott, a key executive with Jim Crockett Jr., who had been a preliminary wrestler for Tunney in the 1950s. Then, following Frank's death in 1983, the business was run by John's son, Jack Tunney, and Frank's son, Eddie Tunney. The Tunneys hosted the NWA and Mid-Atlantic wrestling matches until 1984 when Jack Tunney abandoned Crockett and signed with Vince McMahon's expanding WWF, with Jack serving as figurehead on-air president of the WWF from 1984 to 1995. Yes, that Jack Tunney. He's also served as the legitimate president of the Titan Sports Canada, the local arm of the WWF's parent company. So when we go back in time and we go to Queensberry Athletic Club, let's learn a little bit more about Jack Corcoran, the Queensberry King. And this is from the MapleLeafWrestling.blogspot.com website. This is a 2018 article written by them. And again, this is MapleLeafWrestling.blogspot.com. Have an article here on Jack Corcoran. On April 4th, 1922, Jack Corcoran promoted a bout between Johnny Dundee and Jimmy Goodrich at the new Civic Arena on the exhibition grounds. Corcoran was said to be a well-known West End sportsman and wanted a big attraction for his debut as a boxing promoter after Toronto had beat out Buffalo in New York City for the bout. It attracted the largest fight crowd of the season with over 8,000 to see Dundee beat Goodrich in 10 rounds. In March of 1923, Corcoran refereed at the Canadian trials at Toronto's Gaiety Theatre alongside Lou Marsh and was picked to go to Winnipeg to oversee the national bouts later that month. Corcoran also refed on his own on early cards, often with Marsh as a ref or a judge. Marsh was a noted and well-respected sportsman and writer and frequently wrote the results column for the previous night's cards. He was also an early supporter of Corcoran, and they ran in the same circles, hunting and fishing together. When Marsh died in March of 1936, Corcoran related several anecdotes, including crediting Marsh with saving him when their canoe turned over on a fishing trip. Marsh was so influential and respected that the Star devoted all of its cover and most of its first four pages to him upon his passing. The Queensberry Athletic Club is formed in 1923 when Corcoran joins with local promoter, Eddie Rudd, to run additional cards around Toronto. They held bouts at the Coliseum with some problems early on with canceled bouts and such, but came back with strong cards. Rudd had promoted as early as 1922 on his own, around the same time Corcoran had put on his first card. They went on to run cards at the Standard Theater at Dundas and Spadina in 1924, and there was a mention of, quote, less than 3,000 paid for three consecutive cards held in January, though that number doesn't seem too bad for a small venue. An item on the February 20th, 1924, looking at the upcoming Queensberry boxing card, mentions that wrestling may be making a comeback in the city. Cards have been held at the Labor Temple with Jack Forbes, George Walker, and other notables of the day appearing. In November of 1924, the Ontario Athletic Commission relicensed the two clubs promoting boxing in the city, Corcoran's Queensberry Athletic Club and George Williams International Athletic Club. It was said that it was a vote of confidence that the two groups were bringing good cards to Toronto. A November 4, 1925 item in the Star had Corcoran buying the Tyndall Apartments on Tyndall Avenue, consisting of 12 suites and two buildings, for a deal which included cash in exchange of housing properties on Ossington Avenue in amounts up to $84,500. He also owned the namesake Queensberry Hotel on Scarlet Road. A May 22, 1930 item refers to Corcoran buying one of the Seagram stable horses at auction for $100. A horse owned by Corcoran and Rundle placed second in a race at Long Branch in June of 1930, and another, Fire Girl, placed first at a race later that week. He added more and kept a presence in the sport for many years, often at the races at Thorncliffe Track in Toronto, and were named for sporting and local personalities, including the wrestling stars and Corcoran himself. Due to the resurgence of pro wrestling in Toronto under promoter Ivan Mikhailov, on November 6, 1930, Corcoran promoted his own first wrestling show at Massey Hall. A write-up prior to that suggested that the principals on the scene, nothing remains now for Corcoran to do but sit back and listen to the merry click of the turnstiles, of which would appear certain due to the large demand for tickets. It was added that despite the outstanding wrestlers in the main event, Corcoran has decided not to increase his prices at the same popular rates will prevail as at previous shows. The main event was to feature Jim Browning versus Jack Roughhouse. Jack Roughhouse McCarthy, said to be a former sparring partner of Jack Dempsey. Of course, Jim Browning was a world champion of that era, and Jack Dempsey, legendary boxer, of course. A review by the Star's sport editor, W.A. Hewitt, said that Corcoran was handed a lemon for his first show. Roughhouse McCarthy turned out to be such a poor performer that the Queensbury Athletic Club reported him to the Ontario Athletic Commission. The crowd razzed the wrestlers in a good-natured way, and Jim Browning, a real good grappler, was also a victim, though he made short work of McCarthy in a very businesslike manner. The show lacked color and action. Promoter Corcoran should make amends in his next show by bringing along some top-notchers that the fans are acquainted with instead of unknowns of the mat game. Lou Marsh wrote in his column that Corcoran was double-crossed and alleges one of the main bouters, McCarthy evidently, was pie-eyed, and the Ontario Athletic Commission may fine Corcoran the purse amount. Marsh suggested that Corcoran will not be successful until he brings in a rival gang of equal strength to the crowd which is operating here now, a crowd which knows what it's all about, and adds Corcoran might well be advised to stick to boxing, and he knows his boxers and has confidence of the local boxing public. Prior to the November 19th card, Lou Marsh wrote that it was openly charged that certain interested parties paid a couple of howlers to go to the first card and start the Bronx Cheers, and that the same parties fixed up a nice set of double crosses for the show. Tampering, promotional tampering, imagine that. For the second show, Corcoran set up John Pisick, legendary shooter, versus Joe Shimkus as the main event. Pisick wins, and in other bouts, Jim Browning returned to meet Alan Eustace, and Frank Wolf beat Jack Croget in the opener. Marsh, in his column the next day, suggested that Corcoran and Mikhailov could get together and set up a Pisick-Sonnenberg bout. Sonnenberg was appearing on the Mikhailov cards. Pisick returns in December, and Marsh plays up a rivalry between Corcoran and Mikhailov. On October 23, 1931, Marsh writes that Corcoran is moving his show to the Coliseum for the night's card, that he is probably trying to get the boys used to the wide-open spaces for the shows Corcoran runs in the future going to be at the new Maple Leaf Gardens. He adds that the Maple Leaf Gardens people have a boxing license and have hooked up with Corcoran for the wrestling end. The October 23rd show draws over 7,000 people to the Coliseum to see George Zaharias battle Mike Romano, and Hewitt writes that when the Queensbury Club stages its championship bout at the new Maple Leaf Gardens on November 19th, a record wrestling crowd is likely to attend. The 7,000 is, to date, one of the largest crowds to see pro wrestling in Toronto. Corcoran brings in world champion Jim Londos for the November 5th card to introduce him to Toronto fans, matching him up with Romano. Romano is said to be runner-up in the New York tournament conducted to provide an opponent at Madison Square Garden for Londos, and is sufficient indication as to the caliber of the bout presented to fans here by the Queensbury Club. For the first Maple Leaf Garden show on November 19, 1931, reported attendance was 15,800, and Corcoran was off to a good start. Lou Marsh wrote that it brought in $13,000 from paid tickets, as many more were invited guests. Another 2,000 was said to be outside, unable to get in. Marsh added the brains of the curly wrestling loop, Joe Tootsmont, who wrestled Hans Bauer on the card, was really there counting up the customers. Mont was, in fact, a partner in the Toronto office. Tootsmont, a year later, stood trial locally on a manslaughter charge due to a car accident that killed a woman, and Corcoran was called to testify. And if you go to the 32 Ultimate History of Pro Wrestling Timeline at whenitwascool.com. You can read all about Tootsmont's manslaughter trial. On January the 7th, 1932, it is written that Corcoran had added St. Catharines to his loop and drew more than 1,600 on the 6th to the new stadium there to see Frankie Hart, Jack Colgate, Alex Kosboski, and others. He's also branched out to Niagara Falls, Hamilton, Brantford, and other towns around the Southern Ontario area for regular shows. A February 29, 1932 item says Corcoran is just out of the shadows after a bout with kid pneumonia. He had been ill for 10 days and word was held back from the sporting public. It adds that Foster Hewitt, sports announcer, and Andy Taylor, building manager of the Maple Leaf Gardens, were also out with the flu. Another item says Corcoran was gone from the office for nearly 6 weeks. In March of 1933, Corcoran is said to be promoting in Buffalo and Detroit. He also runs wrestling in Ottawa beginning in 1932. An April 12, 1933 story says Corcoran, who controls pro wrestling over the major portion of Canada, is after a contract with Jumpin' Joe Savoldi, who had just pinned Jim Lundos in Chicago to earn the claim as world titleist. And by the way, you need to read that. And again, talking about the Ultimate History of Pro Wrestling timeline, whenitwascool.com, go to the timeline, go to April of 1933. That is a story in and of itself, is Joe Savoldi's supposed world title win over Jim Lundos. Another item says it is Percy Gardner who is negotiating on his brother-in-law Jack's behalf. Gardner is noted to be financially behind the Queensbury Athletic Club since the very beginning. It goes on to say that it's likely that Gardner is acting on behalf of the Bowser Curly Mont interest in which Jack was a partner. So he's part of that wrestling trust there. An item a year and a half later mentions that at the time everyone thought the man behind the money was, quote, screwy to offer that much money. Savoldi, after beating Lundos, had passed that amount already just halfway into 3 years, making the deal a shrewd one. In 1934, Corcoran made news as part of the Ontario Athletic Commission bribery scandal. In 1935, Corcoran published a wrestling guide featuring sketches by Lou Skuse, whose work was a regular fixture in the Star, and included drawings of the wrestlers with facts about their careers. The book pamphlet type was sold at newsstands and turns up occasionally on eBay. In May of 1937, Corcoran appeared before the Ontario Athletic Commission to settle a dispute with fellow boxing promoter Playfair Brown and agreed to work with his rival. Fellow rivals Jack Allen and Doc Cook were also present. Corcoran had another nasty battle with the flu in March of 1939, taking some time off to recuperate down in Florida. Toots Mont supervised the March 16th card featuring Jim Lundos versus Vic Christie. For the March 23 card, John Tunney is said to be taking over the matchmaking duties in the absence of Corcoran. In July of 1939, Corcoran and eight others, including six children and a dog, escaped serious injury after their boat capsized in Lake Simcoe. They spent over 2 hours clinging to cushions, waiting to be rescued, eventually by two teens, and said to be just in the nick of time. The story made the front page in Toronto. Corcoran later received a bronze medal from the Royal Canadian Humane Society, presumably for saving the life of the dog. The original incident, the article made note of the fact that Jack blamed a lot of the distress on the flailing of the dog in the water and that the dog almost cost them their lives. 20 years later, 1959, Corcoran reconvened those that were on the lake that day, the children now all grown up, and gave them each $1,000. It's around this time in 1939 that Corcoran sails to the Tunney brothers. John Tunney was matchmaking and is now promoter. His younger brother Frank was the secretary of the Queensbury Club. He is listed as matchmaker, and other partners include Paul Bowser, of course of the AWA down in Boston, Jack Ganson, and Jerry Monahan. Jack stays in the office handling some of the boxing, but starts to retire away from the promotion. Frank stays over for his brother John when he dies suddenly in January of 1940. Jack continued to be the boxing promoter through 1941, but by 1942 was retired from the office in an official sense. A 1943 charity mentioned referring to him as the Queensbury Hotel's Jack Corcoran. While later articles refer to the Tunneys taking over for an ailing Corcoran, Jack appears to have wanted to retire at the time. He left at a relatively young age and went on to spend another 25 years in the city. The severe bouts of the flu, the near-death experience on the lake, and then the sudden passing of John may have expedited his decision. A 1941 story said that Cochran was still receiving 5% of the gate from Tunney's show, while he is referred to in the late 1940s as a, quote, retired from everything and keeping a low profile. When noted multi-sport, including a short stint in pro wrestling, athlete Lionel Concher died in 1954, Cochran was one of the guards of honor at the funeral alongside Primo Carnera, Red Dutton from the NHL, and others. In December 1957, a bit of entertainment section reports that Cochran is a great-hearted Irishman who himself has done more for humanity in his time than many a group. Was this week dragged out of mothballs and asked to talk about the infamous Red Ryan. It goes on to describe a TV interview with Jack about the infamous bank robber and one-time wrestler Red Ryan. On April 12, 1960, Milt Dunnell, in his sports column, reported that Cochran was ailing at a Fort Lauderdale hospital. Jack John Joseph Jack Cochran passed away on April 12, 1965 at St. Joseph Hospital in Toronto. A sports page obituary in the Star lists him as 73 years old. It lists him as brother of Margaret, Ambrose, and Vincent. Earlier mentions of hunting trips and social events list other family members, though unclear on the relation. He was a junior. His father, Jack Sr., had attended John Tunney's funeral in January 1940. Jack's mother had died in 1950 in Kingston and was mentioned as mother of many professional boxers and wrestlers. Jack was buried at Mount Hope Cemetery, as was Frank Tunney when he passed in 1983. In an interview in Frank's later days, he remarked that Jack had been like a father figure to him, easy to work for, and obviously an influence on the younger Tunney, who lost his own father at a young age. Frank, with ever-present cigar in hand, just like Jack before him, would mirror his predecessor's easy demeanor and likewise earn the respect of the Toronto sporting community. Jack Cochran, definitely an underrated name in Maple Leaf history, and I would say pro wrestling history as well, for sure. Some of those early Queensbury Athletic Club shows, just kind of flipping through some of the results there. You have names like, I mean, this wasn't mentioned, but Ed Strangler Lewis worked there early April of 1930. The looks like they were certainly aligned with Paul Bowser's AWA World Championship, as that title was regularly defended there with Gus Sonnenberg, of course, coming in, as we talked about in the article. The original Stanley Stasiak, now not the one who was briefly the WWWF champion, but there was a Stanley Stasiak before that, wrestled there in the 1930s. Gus Sonnenberg made a lot of appearances, as did John Pisick and Jim Browning, and these are all major names of the day, to be sure. The future very controversial world champion, Henry DeGlane, also worked shows there for the Queensbury Athletic Club, as one would expect. Gino Garibaldi, who was a top star of the day as well. I mean, you flip through these results, and it is, you know, largely very recognizable names. Ed Don George, Henry DeGlane, Dick Shicott. Again, apparently the AWA World Championship being the primary belt that's going to be defended there. You go up into even by the mid-1930s, you got this. That's the time when Jim Browning was being promoted as world champion, especially by the New York State Athletic Commission. He's defending the championship there, so he seemed to have a pretty long relationship with the Queensbury Athletic Club throughout the 1930s. By the time you get into the late 1930s, which would be when the, you know, right before the organization changes over to Maple Leaf Gardens, you still have that relationship with the Paul Bowser group. You have Ivan Robert defending, he's the world champion at that time. Steve Crusher Casey, of course, is a multi-time champion. Dano O'Mahony. Again, all big name stars, all looks like almost every show featured anywhere between at the least three and at the most five bouts, almost every single show following basically the same lineups. I'm going to look and see if I saw the one of the last shows there. So there was a couple of there was a big Maple Leaf wrestling tournament that happened in January of 1939, and it seems to have been branded in that Maple Leaf Wrestling. But the Queensbury Athletic Club show that happened before that in January 17, 1939, had a Joe Savoldi beating Hardy Cruschamp, two straight falls. House Painter Hogan beat Tom Mahoney, and Alex Kasabowski went to a draw with Jim Ostry. Then you had this tournament that went on under Maple Leaf Garden branding. And then on the 30th, on January 30th, 1939, what I guess would be the last Queensbury Athletic, no, I'm sorry, February the 6th, 1939, what I find is the last branded Queensbury Athletic Club show takes place with Ted Cox beating Bob Wagner in two straight falls. George Coverley beats Mays McLean. Ignacio Martinez went to a draw with Jack Donovan. Pat Fraley defeats Joe Marsh. And then your first, I guess, branded Maple Leaf Garden show, February the 9th, 1939. There were Maple Leaf Garden shows in January 1939, to be sure, but this February 9th, 1939 show, which is, I guess, when they start running their usual non-tournament matches and stuff, this is your names you have on there. You have Joe Savoldi beats Vic Christie. Man Mountain Dean beats Jack MacArthur. Jules Strongbow defeats the Cardiff Giant. Hardy Cruschamp beats Joe Pazendek. Tom Mahoney defeats Al Dunlop. So the Queensbury Athletic Club, an interesting kind of little footnote in pro wrestling, but a foundational block in what would become one of the most celebrated and well-known promotions in history, the long-running shows at Maple Leaf Gardens with the Tunnies. So I hope you've enjoyed this this little look back at the letter Q in our pro wrestling A through Z, and I hope you'll check out all of our other stuff we're doing over at whenitwascool.com. Hope you will become, the most important thing you can do is become a Patreon supporter to keep us going. We have a whole podcasting network, multiple shows every week, almost every single day of the week. And in fact, for the last few weeks, we've been running two shows a day, every day. Last week, we had just looking back at my schedule here at the time I'm recording the show, last week on, let's see, this would be Wednesday, I had a Stuck in the Desert podcast where the host, the Desert Rat, looked at Ann McCaffrey, who's an author at her books. Plus, we had a Heel Mustache podcast, which I do. Then on Thursday, we had Uphill Both Ways, which is Mike and Bowden and Joe Perry. They do a retro pop culture podcast. And that same day, I did a biography podcast special on pro wrestler Pentagon and how the old original Pentagon back in AAA wrestling, how does that relate to the current Pentagon Jr., a character that is a big star in many different promotions, including AEW. We examine that. Friday of last week, we had Wrestling with the Dog podcast, plus Life and Times with KZ, as veteran podcaster Kid Zombie looks at various aspects of a popular culture. On Saturday, aired the Fireside Chat podcast, plus the in our A through Z of pop culture series, we took a look at Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. This past Sunday, we did Dragon King Dark as part of our series of 100 of the Darkest Moments in Pop Culture History. And yesterday, on the When It Was Cool podcasting network, debuted a brand new show called Masters of None, looking at Masters of the Universe, Respect the Canon. And this is a great show hosted by Christoph, looking at Masters of the Universe. We do retro pop culture, which is music, sports, TV, music, movies, pro wrestling history. If it's pop culture, we're talking about it over at whenitwascool.com. Hope you're looking for something new to listen to. We've got you covered. Almost 2,000 shows in our archives. Go to whenitwascool.com. Hit any of those Patreon buttons, and I'll see you back here again soon with another show. Hey, everybody. Carl here from whenitwascool.com. I've talked to you a lot about our Patreon, which is the most important way you can support us. But let me remind you of what else we do. You can follow us on social media on both Facebook and Twitter. Grab the links off the front page of whenitwascool.com. Check out all of our free podcasts on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, and other major podcast outlets. Check out Dragon King Dark, along with Stuck in the Desert Podcast, Uphill Both Ways, Wrestling with the Dog, The Thrash Metal Show, Life and Times with KZ, our new show, The Plot, Dragon King Carl Classic Wrestling Audio Show, Fireside Chat, and Heel Mustache Podcast, plus many specials every month. Go to whenitwascool.com for everything retro pop culture and more. Hit that Patreon link for premium podcast content. If you're looking for something fresh and fun to listen to, then bookmark whenitwascool.com.